How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Locked On NBA Podcast, Zach Lowe, ESPN with us. I know you're all very excited for this, so we'll get right to it. And also because with this league, we don't know until how often, you know, we more news might break.
This is happening.
Yes. David Blatt just got fired as we're doing this, which also means, depending when I post this, we will not talk about the upcoming San Antonio Golden State game a great deal, because it may, by the time you hear it, it may have already happened. So just quickly, your reaction on the news out of Cleveland that just broke 20 minutes ago.
I mean, we all kind of knew this was coming at some point, right? Like, Blatt was hired before LeBron came. So he was hired to coach a very different team. He never seemed like LeBron's guy. LeBron and even some other players kind of sold him out publicly a few times. There's been rumors for a long time that LeBron and Rich Paul love Ty Lue, want Ty Lue to be the coach. Ty Lue is now the coach. He got a three-year deal right off the bat, according to Woj. In that sense, it's not a surprise, but man, the Cavs are 30-11. Kyrie's missed almost the whole season. Mozgov was a mess for three quarters of the season. Shumpert missed, half the season? They haven't looked great. The Warriors game was a catastrophe, but it just seems like weird timing.
It's not an organization that's got a great track record of things going right, other than that Gloria gave birth to the greatest athlete in the history of sports in their state.
They've just had, like, if you look at their last 15 years of existence, here's what they've accomplished. I mean, I don't mean to say this. David Griffin has made some really nice trades on the margins to get Shumpert and JR and Mozgov and things like that. But, like, essentially the Cavs fell ass backward into being the place where LeBron was born, the team in the place where LeBron was born, and winning the lottery an absurd number of times to get trade assets that turned into Kevin Love and other things. Yeah, I don't even know. And the interesting thing is Gilbert and Griff have gone out of their way many, many times to defend Blatt. He's been their guy, and he's not their guy anymore.
Clearly, if they win this championship, LeBron will have won his championship. Because this is LeBron is, for all the talk, it does sure seem like LeBron has become player, GM, / coach at this point.
He always was. I mean, it's just a matter of how much he wants to flex his muscles, right? He sort of famously plays that passive-aggressive kind of management style. But, yeah, look, the new coach is not going to make Kevin Love any more able to defend the Steph Curry, Draymond Green pick and roll. That's the bottom line.
All right, so this may be a totally irrelevant thought. As I knew I was going to talk to you today, I came up with three or four, like, okay, I'm going to make statements. We'll go true or false.
Yeah.
So one of my thoughts on the Cavaliers is it's not so much Love, but it's Kyrie. They had a players' meeting two games after Kyrie came back. We saw it firsthand on the night where Kyrie dropped 30 with no assists and LeBron lost it in the locker room. I'm not totally convinced that the issue in Cleveland isn't a Kyrie-LeBron issue as much as it is a Kevin Love issue.
I think that's fair. I just think matchup specific, the big guy who has to move around is so much harder to hide defensively than even a point guard, even though Kyrie, in that specific matchup, has to guard either Curry, that's bad, Clay, that's bad, Harrison Barnes, that's bad. There's no place to put him. Love is just harder to hide. But, yeah, look, I mean, there were people on Golden State's coaching staff, I wrote this during the finals, who, when Kyrie got hurt, and there was that off day after game one when it was announced he would be out for the series, some of the people on that staff said, this is now a harder series for us than it was before. Wouldn't say that publicly, but that was a thing. So, you know, we'll see.
The problem the Cavaliers have is they have to try to compare to the Warriors. Kevin Love is pretty darn good when he compares to the 28 other matchups. But the fact that the Cavaliers' problem is that they're trying to compare to one of the greatest teams in the history of the game, I think everyone's going to look flawed that way.
Well, and I think that's what makes what they do now so fascinating. And by that I mean how Lou coaches, what they do with Love over the next month ahead of the trade deadline, how they build their roster this year, next year, because most teams that are good are like still mostly concerned about themselves. Like, we got to get through our conference, we got to get through playoff series. Like, the Cavs, given the state of the East, which is better but not at the top, they literally are like, I got to figure out how to match up with this team in Golden State and this team in San Antonio, and that's like my number one priority. That's very unusual.
If you're one of these middling teams that have a bunch of talent but don't have a star, Boston is kind of the prime example. Would you go get Kevin Love? Do you believe he still has the capability of carrying a franchise? Does he have the capability of carrying a franchise?
Has he ever carried a franchise?
It's really a hard question since Minnesota had all those injuries. It was almost impossible to actually ever tell what they were capable of doing.
I think he's capable of being 1B or 2 on a great team. I don't know if he's capable of being 1 on a great team, but I do think he's a better player than he's shown in Cleveland. And it's just hard for him to be the third option. It's hard for anyone to look good on offense when you're the third option. He's never going to look great on defense. But on the right team, yeah, I think he could be a 1B. I would look around. I think some teams will. There's no doubt that the perception of him has changed in a bad way in just the last 6 months.
When Michael Jordan and the Bulls were dominant, virtually nobody other than maybe Jim Clemens and the Dallas Mavericks tried to emulate what they were doing. And yet everyone's trying to emulate the Warriors. And in my opinion, virtually everyone who's trying to emulate the Warriors is making somewhat of an ass of themselves this year. Is this a grand mistake by everyone to look at the Warriors and try to be the Warriors when they have the best player in the world, or second best, and the most unique player in the world? And I know most unique is bad English, but work with me.
Well, who's making an ass out of themselves?
I think Milwaukee tried it a little bit, though. Monroe in the middle. Phoenix definitely went to it. It isn't working. New Orleans went to it with Gentry, trying to emulate it. It isn't working. I mean, most of the teams that Milwaukee's played better as of late, with Prunty over there. But I think when you start looking around at the teams that have been underwhelming so far this year, most of them are trying to emulate a spread skill, small ball floor that doesn't necessarily work unless you have those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all doing it in their own way. Like, Phoenix thought they would be a sort of, like, Mavericks-esque pick-and-roll team with Tyson as, like, a legit normal center, right? New Orleans with Anthony Davis at center, I think that just makes sense. Like, that's how they should play at least half the game all the time. And then they have all these other centers who stink but are traditional centers. I don't know if they're how much they're emulating it. Yeah, I mean, I think emulating Golden State is one thing. And taking some of what makes them good and trying to do it on your own terms is another thing, and I think that's smart. Like, more three-point shooting, better passing, higher IQ, a more spread floor, to the degree you can do it, is smart. But yeah, if you're looking at them and saying, oh, Draymond Green at center, that's lethal. Like, let's put five little guys out there. Like, it might not work out for you.
To me, it seems it's skill ball. I mean, I look at Roy Hibbert, who was a viable NBA player 4 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
An all-star, I believe, 2 years ago.
He's now a almost unviable player because he just has enough skill. You have to – the thing that jumps out to me is you got to be skilled. You got to be a passing big. You have to have – you may not actually have to shoot long range. We want to put it out to the three-point line, but Aldridge is – and the Spurs are proving it can be at 15, 16 feet. But you've got really almost more than anything else, you got to be able to move the basketball as a big now.
Yeah, well, as at every position. I mean, I think that's – you know, I've written about this a lot. I think that's the biggest – George Karlaftis told me the biggest change in the league is that passing is his most valued skill now. Is like, you've got at every position, you've got to be able to catch, drive, and pass. And that didn't used to be the case. You could be Bruce Bowen and just stand in the corner and do your thing, and you can't do it. You could be Ersan Ilyasova and just pop for three-pointers, and that was like, people couldn't figure that out. Now people figure that out. You got to be able to do stuff, and yeah, it's a different league now.
Well, you've written about that a lot. I don't remember your phraseology, but basically the stretch four.
The playmaking four. I don't remember who I stole that from. I stole it from someone who didn't want to take credit for it, so I took credit for it. And then Steve Kerr said it, and that was a big deal. A couple other people. The playmaking four is a real thing. Like, you got to be able to make plays now.
You're going to have to teach Kevin Pelton how to do these things and then have other people talk about them, because Pelton did the most interesting piece 2 years ago, which was gravity. And then it just, like, I fully expected when he did the gravity piece for everyone to start talking gravity, and gravity is the whole essence here. So
yeah.
You have to teach Pelton the trick.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Your colleague, Kevin Pelton.
My colleague, yeah. Now, well, we were always colleagues. Now we're like really colleagues. Yeah, gravity score. There's a whole thing. I wrote a piece on Kyle Korver 2 years ago being secretly a star, and then he became an all-star. Yeah, that, like, all this stuff matters. Shooting and passing. You got to be able to do it.
High-volume three-point shooters. I've got my pack rating that I use to evaluate offense players, and it always amazes me who's in there. So the two guys this year – are J.J. Redick and Omri Caspi are just so much better than anyone realizes. A year ago was obviously Kyle Korver. Came out as the third most impactful offensive player in the league. People want to know what's wrong with Atlanta. That's what's wrong with Atlanta. Kyle Korver. Do we still get – does this league grasp the value of a J.J. Redick, maybe even of an Omri Caspi right now, these high-volume three-point shooters?
I mean, Kyle made the All-Star team last year, right? So I guess people are starting to. Yeah, I mean, like, I bet you if you look at the Hawks plus-minus, it's still dramatically better with Kyle on the floor, even though he's not shooting as many threes and he's not shooting them as accurately and, frankly, looks a little slow on the floor right now just because you cannot – leave him a foot of space. I think JJ deserves consideration for the All-Star team more than he's going to get. I mean, he's been ridiculous. And the interesting about him, he's not just good at three. He's shooting like 55% from long twos, and he takes a lot of long twos. I think the league is beginning to realize how valuable those guys are.
40% of your shots are coming from long two, no matter what, really. I mean, by the time you that kind of seems
at the team level.
Yeah. The Spurs have almost embraced it. They're up to 44-45% right now. Are they on to something here with their reverse money ball offense? Their defense is still as money ball as theirs. So anybody who starts to tell you that the Spurs don't believe in the money ball thing, just watch them play defense. But is there something else going on where they've said, hey, wait a sec. If I know 40% of my possessions are mid-range shots, these guys are valuable.
I mean, maybe. There's been a lot of talk in the last 5-6 years about will a team – leverage the fact that everyone gives you mid-range shots. So will a team build their offense around the fact that we know we can get that shot? And in reality, like, Dallas kind of did that, and the solution is you just need historically great mid-range shooters like Jason Terry and Dirk Nowitzki to make that work. It is interesting that LaMarcus has made a three this season. I think he's 0 for 10. And everyone expected, oh, he'll go to San Antonio and take more threes. He's taking less or fewer, to be grammatically correct. It is interesting. I mean, what the Spurs are doing to me really comes down to defense. Their defense is just so insanely good that, you know, everything else is secondary to that.
I've got a really weird thought on their defense.
Sure.
So I watch them play. It's as though they're moving before plays are made. And I almost wonder if they studied stats view to such a point where they've analyzed if the ball's at the right elbow, the only 70% of the passes go here, 25% go here, and they're almost pre-rotating to the locations where passes are thrown.
Now you're going to change the way that I watch the Spurs. I haven't noticed that. I just noticed that. I haven't noticed that is the answer to your question.
It might be absurd, but it feels when I watch them that they're jumping passing lanes in a manner that's unnatural.
Kawhi especially has a way of appearing. Transported. I don't know what the word for it. In Harry Potter, it's like apparated. Like he just apparates to a spot. Like he wasn't there and now he's there. I mean, I just think that they're really smart and really long and tenacious. And I don't know if maybe there is more to it. Maybe they do have a secret sauce.
It's interesting though, because I watched them. Tony Parker's, I mean, they've got Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green's long and they're big. They shouldn't be great. You don't look at that roster and say, oh, that's going to be a historically great defensive roster the way you looked at Rodman and Pippen and Harper and Jordan and said, okay, that's a historically great defensive roster.
I don't know. I mean, Kawhi was a defensive player of the year. He's probably the best wing defender since Scottie Pippen. I put Danny Green on my second team all defense last year, so I clearly like him. I've always thought Aldridge is wildly underrated as a defensive player. And Duncan is Duncan, and you start with those four, that's pretty damn good.
All right. It's more credit to Aldridge. Maybe I watched Aldridge too many times when he was scoring his 22 and not putting the focus on his.
That happened for sure.
This is the longest anyone's gone NBA conversation all year without talking about the Warriors. Yeah. We've all watched them. We've all talked about them. And I'm sure, kind of knowing you as I do, you're trying to find some other way to talk about the brilliance. What is it? What is it jumps out to you maybe about the brilliance of the Warriors that isn't discussed enough?
I guess there is nothing more to say about the Warriors, but I think their IQ doesn't get enough talk. Like how rare it is to find players who are this smart and build a team out of players who are this smart. Like I did a little tidbit this week about how they re-switch on defense. Like, they get a lot of pub for how they switch. Like, oh, we've got all these guys that are the same size, they can switch. But when they have two guys who aren't the same size that switch, they'll, like, they find these little moments, these little blips where they can get back to their original assignments almost like it's nothing. Like, it's just like, it's like totally natural to them, and it's not natural. Like, teams can't – you watch Houston play defense. They can't even switch once without tripping over themselves. Golden State, they're just constantly on a string, moving together, making decisions. It's like they have a mind meld. It's crazy.
It's interesting. I will share with you one on Golden State that jumped out at me. So I do my own shoot around every day.
Yeah.
So at 2 o'clock every day, no matter – stop what I'm doing, and I go call the first quarter of our opponent. So for today, it was – Brooklyn, I just went and called them. Luckily, I did, because I wouldn't have recognized Markel Brown. And I've done my prep by that point. On Golden State, I can't get any of my stuff in. They're so quick coming up the floor that there's no time for me to be able to insert any of their trends, any of their stories. Stories are long. I mean, with us, you can, like, tell a novel between the time we use possession.
I was going to say, a very marked contrast to the Utah Jazz. Yeah.
I got criticized. I don't call every single one of our passes. I told someone I'd pass out. But it's an interesting, to me, pace of play tells one story. But this as a play-by-play announcer, there's no one even close to how quick all their actions are and how fast everything is they do. By the time in which I can actually say, you know, even just who has the ball to the next spot, it's gone.
Yeah, they don't mess around. There's no wasted motion. They cut hard. They pass quickly. They screen hard. They're a machine. And, like, I was talking to something. There was this idea before the Cavs game. They're like, oh, the Warriors are slumping a little bit. Oh, their defense is a little bit of slump. Then they beat the Cavs by 1,000 points. They beat the Bulls by 1,000 points. And now they're 39-4 or 40-4, whatever in four. One loss was without Curry. One loss was without Draymond. One loss was on the second end of a back-to-back on the last game of a road trip after a double overtime game that night, or a triple overtime.
Seven-game road trip.
A long road trip. That leaves you with one loss that's, like, real. 43 games, one real loss.
I don't want to step on what you're going to write or when you're going to write it. You spent time with Gordon and Quinn today. We could do one of two things. You could answer, just share your thoughts now, or I could call you later so I promote your piece. I don't know what you want to do on that.
We can do both. I don't care.
So then let's just roll for a second. Just quickly, you spent time with Gordon and Quinn today. What were your thoughts on you know, kind of the story you're working on or whatever? What was your kind of takeaway leaving spending time with a Jazz primary player and their head coach?
Gordon has become one of the most thoughtful interviews in the league. Every time I run into Gordon, I'm excited to talk to him. And I asked him some tough questions that I thought he would duck, and he did not duck them. I was excited about that. Quinn is Quinn. I mean, Quinn is a thoughtful dude. As far as my thoughts on the Jazz, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I think that I just – look, all the Utah fans are A, nuts in a good way, sometimes a bad way. Oh, national media doesn't write about us. I think I've written about the Jazz more than the Jazz, the Magic, and the Suns. I need to stop writing about them. I find the Jazz fascinating for this very fundamental reason. They have, like, a million good young players, and at some point they're going to have to decide who's on the team when they get really good. So that's what I've been thinking a lot about.
Give me a little more thoughts on Gordon and what you just – What were you trying to find out, and what jumped out to you there?
Talking to him? Just his feelings about the team and his future on the team and stuff like that. What jumped out at me? I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil the Gordon stuff. Gordon was good.
Give me your breakdown of him as a player. I think for our fans right now, for the Jazz fans right now, I actually think for the rest of the league, I think two things. I think the rest of the league's late on him. I think he's really much better than most people realize. Our fans are dealing with an issue that in the fourth quarter when he's asked to carry, that's probably not in his strength. He does everything else brilliantly. It's not necessarily in his strength to be one of the six guys in the league who can just go get you a bucket. And so it's a hard kind of yin and yang for people to look at.
He is a tough shot maker, though. That's what's interesting. Those little leaning, weird fall-away jumpers, he's good at those. Like, that's the kind of shot you normally associate with someone who does carry that load. I mean, Rodney Hood carries that load a lot for the Jazz late in games. I mean, against the Knicks the other night, it was the Rodney Hood show, all in crunch time. Gordon is, I mean, let's put it this way. I submitted my All-Star column this week, and draft number one had Gordon Hayward on the roster. And I took about an hour to be away from the column, and I just thought I reconsidered a couple of spots and took him off. He's a star. Gordon Hayward is a star NBA player, a really great all-around player. Is he the first option on a championship team? Probably not, but like you can say that about 99% of players in the NBA.
And by the way, you and I could do the DeMarcus Cousins debate for like 30 minutes, so we won't.
I will write someday about DeMarcus Cousins again, extended, but he's an interesting NBA character.
That was a reference to Zach's podcast with David Thorpe, which you haven't listened to. It's great. Catch it at Low Post on either the ESPN Pod Center or just search
Low
Post.
You know better than me how to find it. Everyone on Twitter is like, where can I find your podcast? I'm like, I don't know. Here it is. Here's the link. I don't know where to find it. iTunes, Stitcher. I don't even know what Stitcher is.
Low Post. Go find it. Thanks, Zach.
No problem.